Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
I've been fortunate enough to have the opportunity to play this game since I was in fourth grade. And I've been with the Panthers now for 8 years, and it's never the right time to step away, but now is the right time for me. It's a tough decision. I've thought about it a lot, and I think now is the right chance for me to move on.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Maryland having a hard time getting it in, and it's off of Morsell. What a nifty play. Davison knocked it off Morsell, who is still standing out of bounds. Davison, 4-3, good!
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Sims spinning, and
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson.
Woo!
Happy beautiful hump day.
Hump day.
It's already a hump day, man. We say it every week, but this week's flying by again. Every single week, don't we say that? What the hell happened to this week? It's already halfway done.
There is no we in you. I'm expecting next Wednesday for you to drop the same line. Hey, this week's flying by.
You guys know it's already Wednesday, man. We're already halfway through the week.
Is it snowing yet? Or?
No. Well, there were flurries on the way into the office
today. I saw a couple flakes on my drive-in.
I had some flurries. Somebody keeps moving this
damn computer.
I know.
Up. There's not
going
to be snowmageddon.
I'm never giving it up. You can tell me that a million times. I'm never giving it up.
I have my
inner child will not let it go.
I'm with you there. Like, I want one snow day with my kids. It's great.
Yeah, get a snow day. You don't have to come into work, pretend like you can't drive on the roads. You go to a bar in the afternoon.
You know, the problem with you is I actually legit don't think any of my cars are capable. You just went and got yourself a nice little rig. So boss man is not going to want to hear
about
from
no
you.
There's no excuse
there.
It's a show goes on.
Two-wheel drive truck.
It's a two-wheel.
I don't know, yeah.
I couldn't afford to go for four. We did two-wheel.
I actually do have, apparently there's like a recall on my truck, and I got to like look it up. I got to find that out.
Go get it.
Well, I don't know if mine is actually affected. So apparently there's a thing with like a fuel something or other.
Fuel injection?
Yeah, something like that. Future cousin-in-law got one just like right after I did, and he texted me this morning, and he was like, yo, you might want to check this out. Put in your VIN number, and I'll let you know. So I got to do that when I get home today.
The funny thing about snow days is I take my kids. Like, we had a big snowstorm just a couple years ago. Remember that one? And I took my kids to a big hill. We went sledding, did the whole thing.
It's glorious.
And I text Dirt. I'm like, hey, what do you do on your off day? And he sent me a picture. Dirt just goes and sleds with other people's kids down hills.
Hey, you guys want to go sledding?
And as soon as they cry or complain, he leaves. He's like, go talk to your parents. You're not my kid.
My favorite thing to do back in the day when it would snow was simply like just cracking open a beer and walking around.
I love watching it just snow. Watching the snow come down.
It's bright all night, so you can party a little bit later on. There's no cars on the road,
none.
So it's like nobody's out and about doing anything. You put on your snow boots, you just go walk around the city with a beer in a brown bag like a homeless person. It's glorious, man. I don't know if I'm too old for that now because we haven't had a big snowstorm, so I haven't been able to try it in a couple of years.
Yeah, well, we could be like Communist Vietnam and say we could stop acting like we care about people walking around with booze. I still don't really understand what that is.
No, you'll have fun because you'll turn. Has the dog been in a?
Well, we've taken him to the mountain a couple of times.
Okay.
So he goes psycho.
You can't really call him a puppy anymore, right? Isn't
he's
full grown?
He's about turned three.
He's full grown. Yeah.
He's full grown.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't remember when you had him as a puppy if we had one of the snowstorms yet or not. So.
He's gotten not a
It's snowed last year
storm.
For like a day.
Yeah.
No,
not like a foot of snow for a week kind of thing. He's gotten, you know, like an inch in the backyard.
Yeah, I think we had three or four last year. So no snow. I did have a moment today that I was worried because it was a big day for us. We came in and we're doing some stuff behind the scenes, and I came in and I'm ready. I'm like, all right, I'm going to wear this shirt, and I'm going to make sure I don't look like a complete homeless person.
I'm wearing my lucky underwear.
And then I put a mark on my face that looks like I'm a domestic violence victim.
We need to talk about this.
It was pretty embarrassing. It's probably one of the dumbest injuries I've given myself.
Are you okay? Do we need to alert the authorities?
No, my 5 foot wife does not strike me.
Okay, are you sure about this?
Yeah, because I always hide the stools.
If you get beat up at home.
I blinked twice. I went to the pantry this morning. I'm making my oldest her lunch, and I'm putting something away. And as I rise, because I kind of bent over to put the fruit snacks away, and as I get up, I smack the left side of my back of the head on like a pantry shelf. And it was like instantaneous of smack, ah! And then when that happened, I was like, get out of the pantry.
Yeah.
But instead of like going all the way up, I kind of stayed, kind of leaned over and swung, smacked my right eye right on the door frame. Instantly, blood starts gushing down my face.
Looks like you boxed 4 rounds this morning.
Yeah, it looks like I am in Fight Club.
Got a little shiner over there.
I couldn't help but think, how many people see this and would never believe the story of how I got this injury? It doesn't have to be domestic. But normally, if you told that story, nobody would believe you.
No, I'm not buying it. That's the oldest excuse in the book, to say you ran into a door.
I hit my head twice right? In a pantry.
Right? That's, nobody's buying that thing.
No, but I don't even buy it when I say it.
Are you falling down the stairs at home, too?
I might be.
It's a little disappointing, though, that you take a shiner like that. Or not even a shiner. You take a cut like that, you don't have a black eye.
Yeah.
That would make it a little cooler.
I was hoping for a better bruise, and maybe it'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah, it could be. Maybe it's a slow, delayed bruise.
But I also figured out that in the 33 years I've been alive on this planet, I've never been in a legit fight, like one-on-one.
Yeah, me either.
I've jumped in a fight and helped a bud.
Yeah.
And it was very brief and unfair.
I don't know what I'm doing.
But outside of that, I've never been in an actual fisticuffs fight. And I hit my head and it hurt. But it gashed me open.
You're thinking to yourself, what if I got punched?
I've had my three-year-old, when she was two, she was hitting. We were kind of like play wrestling. She legit punched me square in the nose, and my nose started bleeding.
Wow, you're sensitive.
Dude, if I got in a fight, people would bust me open, and I would get my ass kicked. That's what I learned this morning. I would get my ass kicked if I was ever in a fight.
They'd have to call the fight in like 2 rounds, because you'd be bleeding. Your eyes would swell open.
Yep.
Couldn't stop the blood from flowing.
I'd be like Nate Diaz. You ever seen Nate Diaz fight?
Yeah.
Every time Nate Diaz fights, he gets his whole face covered in blood. He goes the full rounds.
Right.
But it's just because he's easy to cut. That's how I am. I would probably have blood all over me. And it wouldn't matter to you if I told you if I won the fight. You would look at me and go, you lost the fight. Yeah. You got your ass kicked.
Yeah, there's no chance you won that fight. Look at your face.
That's what it is.
Yeah, that's got to be. Now, I know nothing about boxing or fighting. I do enjoy boxing every now and then at the gym. It's a fun workout, good cardio, kind of lets some stress out.
Boxing's a really good workout.
I enjoy doing that, but I know next to nothing about actual fighting things. I imagine as you're like an up-and-coming fighter, that's a pretty big priority, is testing your skin and your bleedability. That's probably not a word, but I'm going to go with it anyways.
But your areas where you bleed, too.
Sure.
You want to know, like, where is it coming from?
Is his eye going to swell? Is his nose going to bleed? Because that makes you look bad. And then a lot of times in boxing, you just got to call it if something's bleeding so bad and you can't stop the bleeding.
That's what I didn't like about the Triple G and Canelo fight, the first fight. First of all, Triple G won that fight, not Canelo. That was a rigged situation.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Well, I know the second fight Canelo won, the first was a draw. That's right. Triple G clearly won that first fight. It shouldn't have been a draw. But I remember people on Twitter were going back and forth of who looked like they won. And the people that were saying Canelo, their argument was, look at Triple G's face. His eyes are swollen. And I'm like, so he takes like 2 or 3 punches and his body easily swells up. That doesn't determine who wins a fight.
Right.
Triple G got more hits on him that were clean. And just because Alvarez didn't bleed or swell up badly, people were running with this, well, Triple G's got bruised eyes, man.
Right. That's the reason he lost the fight.
It's such a dumb way to think about it. But back in the day, what other...
That was it.
That was kind of your only metric.
Look at his face, man. It looks like a bruised watermelon. Somebody threw strawberries all over him. He got his ass kicked in that fight.
Well, and it reminded me, too, because over the weekend after the Titans won and Derrick Henry was a beast again... My brother calls me, and we're just talking about that game, and he goes, what would you rather? He thought this was a really good question, and I like quickly answered it, and it threw him off. He goes, what would you rather do? Have to tackle Derrick Henry in the wide open field, full speed with pads,
okay,
or take one punch from Mike Tyson? And I said, Derrick Henry easily.
Yeah.
And he was like, what? He's so big, though. He's 6'3", 260.
That's a no-brainer.
I'm like, dude, I've been hit in football bad by big people. I go for his legs. He would probably truck me anyway, and he would carry on, and that's that.
Yeah, he would steamroll over you, and it would hurt like a bee, but sure. It's not going to cause permanent, likely not going to cause permanent brain damage and knock you unconscious.
If you went for his legs, how you remember tackling way back in the day.
Yeah, you take a knee to the shoulder.
Yeah,
hurt.
You'd get hurt, but it wouldn't hurt that bad, right? You get up and go, ah, that kind of sore.
Well, I don't know about that. I think it would still hurt
you're probably right.
A ton, but not as bad as taking one of the dome from Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson would... And I mean this, if Mike Tyson got one clean shot at me, he would hit me so hard in my jaw, I am 90% sure I would die.
Yeah, your jaw would shatter.
Yeah, he would mess up my jaw, go the wrong way, something with my brain would happen. Like, Mike Tyson legit would murder me.
There's a video out there, and I saw it, I don't know how recent it is. But
this morning?
There was one that's circulating of him, like, giving somebody asked him for, like, boxing technique tips at, like, a bar or a cafe or something.
Yeah.
And they filmed him, like, going through a little mock workout just in normal street clothes. And how old is Mike Tyson?
He's 53.
He's 53 years old. Yeah. And it's like, that guy still looks like he would whoop some ass in the ring.
Nobody would beat him.
Like, even Mike Tyson now taking that punch. I would rather take a punch from, or rather take a hit from Derrick Henry in his prime than, like, a 65-year-old Mike Tyson.
Tyson might have to get to like 80 before I even entertain the notion of not choosing Mike Tyson's free hit on me.
Right. I'm not touching that thing.
Because you just know. Yeah, you know, you can watch him and the way that he swings even in that. Like, I saw that same video. It looked like he was in a cafe and it looked like somebody had asked him like a technique question. And he bobbed and weaved for a second, then he threw like
He's throwing some like jabs, some gut punches and stuff, some hooks.
God, I saw that hook and I go, oh man, even at 53, Mike Tyson would still murder me.
By the way, you said Triple G, which made me come full circle and think about something we didn't talk about yesterday. Did you see who was at the Blazer game this weekend?
Our good friend.
Guy Fieri.
Triple D.
Triple D was in the house, baby.
Triple D, baby.
Diners, drive-ins, and dives.
That was the one... That's maybe the one game I regret not going to in the last 10 years of my life, because I would have been the guy to go introduce myself.
Totally would have.
And I also would have taken a picture. I would have shot it to you to send out to the show page.
Yeah, I would have made that thing my profile picture.
Dude, Guy Fieri's the man. And let me give a special shout out. So I only did the campaign for a minute. You know, small businesses, it can be tough to advertise all year, but... I did an endorsement for a really good restaurant. I promise you it's not just seafood, but they have excellent seafood. And it's called Seasons and Regions. It's over here just right by us off the Terwilliger Curves. And I did the endorsement for a couple months. They're really good people. The restaurant's always packed. The food is primo, like fresh, good food. And I guess what I found out? He's in town doing a Portland show. And he went to Seasons and Regions as one of his stops.
Did he really?
They put on their Instagram account a picture of Chef Greg, who's the guy who started the restaurant, and he works there. And it was him with Guy Fieri in the kitchen.
Dude, that is awesome.
I was like, dude, this is badass. I want to know when this airs.
That is awesome. Is it the Triple D show or another one he's doing?
I don't know. Does he do another
show? Does, he does Guy's Grocery Games, which is a must watch.
I watch that. He doesn't travel with that, though,
one,
does
no,
he?
No, that's a local one. And I actually have questions. I would have loved to pick his brain on that. I'm always curious how those work. Like, is that an actual grocery store? Did they buy the grocery store and just put the things in there for the show? Like,
no, that's got to be a real grocery store the way that's set
and
up.
And they just shut it down for like a couple of days a week to film?
They probably film at night or something.
Yeah, I just...
Something weird.
I got a lot of questions with that. Or did he legit just like buy a grocery store and that's his place?
Well, Guy Fieri, if you're driving around, because he also drove his car up here. And it was in the parking lot at Seasons and Regions. People took a picture.
He got his little convertible out there.
And it says, you know, Fieri on the back. But if Guy Fieri's driving around right now listening to this dumb radio program.
Triple D, baby.
Call in or stop in at the radio station. And we would love to talk to you for 30 minutes.
Yeah, Casey Holdall tweeted that out. And I tweeted him the Forrest Gump gif. I'm running. Let's go.
That's my guy.
Up to Moda. Guy's our guy.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we got a good show today. We got two stops on the Daily Ticker. Bobby Petrino back in college football. Statter story. Oregon Duck News. News that we're going to get to here in a minute. We got one player transferring in college football that we told you would, and he denied that he would, and now he is. And Penn State's unfortunately back in the news for not good reasons. So we got a lot to get to. Keekly's retired. Larry Fitz is not. A lot to get to today. We're on Twitter at Dirt and Sprague. That's the show page, and at 1080, the fan of the station. We'll start with the Duck news. Joe Moorhead, the new OC. We'll talk about that next on the Fan. Gone and close. My brother texts me and says, Derrick Henry would snap your neck back with his with his knee. To which I responded, dude, I would clearly go shoulder knowing that that's a possibility.
Yeah, you move the head to the side.
You can dislocate my shoulder or bruise the hell out of it. I'd still rather take the chances of that.
Yeah, everybody, by the way, is texting in saying that clearly taking the tackle from Derrick Henry
it's gotta
is,
be the runaway
is what
winner.
You choose. Yeah. One person is asking, are we talking Tyson in his prime or Tyson now? And my answer is, yes, I understand that it matters, but for us, Joe Schmoes, does it really matter?
No.
And then he also asks, is it bare knuckle or is it glove? To which point, I would not take a bare knuckle punch from Mike Tyson. It would have to be a glove.
Would you rather take...
And even then...
Okay, but hold on here. Would you take a glove knowing his hand is wrapped in tape that's like 3 inches thick?
Yes.
Or a bare hand?
I still think I would go glove.
Yeah, and you just hope that the padding helps.
That has to give you a slight padding? Yeah, less than the blow? I don't know. I'm not a boxer.
I
don't know. But and we also had a listener that is asking to see a picture of you getting punched in the face. And so I'll tweet it out in the next commercial break.
A picture of me
your cut.
I'm like, wait, that person wants me to get punched in the face. They
just
need that much.
Yeah, punch him in the face, man.
Hit him with a right hook, dirt. Yeah, get his ass out of there.
You guys can't see the studio and commercial breaks, but Sprague's got like trainers coming in here, and what are they like? They got an iron press on there, and they're using
quarter,
the towel. They're spraying the water down your throat.
They're telling me to maintain my conditioning. Remember our techniques.
Keep your composure.
Play cat and mouse. You got this. You got it wrapped up. All right, well, let's go from boxing to football. Seems pretty fitting. And the Oregon Ducks, this came out from Brett McMurphy and Bruce Feldman. So two reliable sources here that Joe Moorhead, the former Mississippi State head coach, the former coordinator at Penn State, I believe, did he have a stint in the NFL for a year?
I don't believe so. Let me look. He was at small colleges, so he was at Georgetown.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Akron. He was the head coach at Fordham. He was at Connecticut.
Okay.
He was smaller schools, then went to Penn State, then Mississippi State.
So the former coach of Mississippi State is now the play caller for the Oregon Ducks. Is this as good as you could have done?
I mean, it's hard to think of a name that's better than this, at least that's proven as a head coach, or excuse me, proven as an offensive coordinator. You know, I think the Munoz guy from LSU was intriguing, but then again, it becomes a McVay situation of just because he's working with McVay or you know, just because he's working with Brady down there at LSU, is he really going to be able to translate that to Oregon, unproven as a play caller? So there was question marks about all these other guys. It doesn't mean Moorhead is automatically a grand slam, because I do have my questions about him as well. But I think we were just kind of waiting. It was reported he was in town this past weekend. He did some final interview stuff, and then it kind of dragged into this week, and you wondered if Oregon was just doing the rest of their due diligence. And then last night it's reported he's hired, and then it's reported, well, it's not official yet, and everybody's kind of waiting, and I don't even know if he signed his contract
yet. I don't think he has. That's why Oregon won't send out the press release yet.
Yeah, there's no press release yet. We're going to try and get him on the show when that does actually become official, and I'm wondering if it has to do with them trying to coordinate who a quarterback coach might be, a wide receiver coach potentially. There's bodies changing there. So I think there's still some answers in that regard. I like the hire on at a first glance. My only question is, how much of his notoriety around college football has to do with Saquon Barkley? That is the only question that I have with Joe Moorhead, because you look at him coming to Penn State, becomes the offensive coordinator in 2016. They fire their other OC, who ends up being the offensive coordinator at Washington. They went from the 104th offense in the country, averaging 348 yards per game. In his first year, they jump up to 43rd in the country, averaging about 430 yards per game. And then his second year as OC, they were top 20, 18th in the country at 460 yards per game. That's a big jump, and a lot of people attribute it to him. But he also had Saquon Barkley in his prime, who was one of the best college running backs we've seen in a long time, in both 2016 and 2017. That's the only question I have about Moorhead.
Well, you look at the stats. I love to go to cfbstats.com. They do a great job tracking all the stats and all the conferences and ranking everybody. And he is the prototypical Mario Cristobal guy, right? Like, not to say that the passing game can't ever be elite, especially the way Oregon's recruiting. They probably going to land a quarterback at some point, and everybody's going to go, oh my God, this is an amazing player. But they were 12th in passing offense last year, 179 yards a game, and they were third in the SEC in rushing offense. They had 220 yards per game. Yeah. Those numbers are exactly what Mario's looking for. Mm-hmm. He wants a guy that's going to come in, have a different wrinkle, a different system, but still kind of be doing the same principled things, right? Running the football first and foremost, establishing that line, and controlling the clock. And, you know, I think of all the candidates out there, and you're kind of right in the sense of if he ends on the contract, it's not a done deal. And if you tell me that news breaks that he becomes the Giants OC, I'm not going to be stunned, because maybe that's what he's doing too. He's kind of pinning everybody against each other, and this is what negotiations do. But if he does end up being the guy, I think he got the best guy you could have possibly grabbed. He is, if you're not looking to change your system, I think he's what you want, but I think he also gives you a form of evolution. I think he can add different wrinkles where statistically he's doing the same things that Oregon has been doing with Crystal Ball, but I think the way that he lines up on their plays, or what his calls are on second and third downs and shorts and longs, I think those are the things that you're going to see differences in, right? Play calling at the right time versus maybe a play call at the wrong time, which is what Duck fan was probably so infuriated with Marcus Arroyo.
Right.
And so I think you got the best guy out there. The funniest thing to me is a guy who doesn't have a dog in the fight, really, is Washington hired their guy who was the offensive coordinator at Penn State, but the offense ranked like 121st. Joe Moorhead came in the year after him at Penn State, and they jumped to 21st nationally. So Oregon and Washington are battling the conference out. They're battling in the North. They're battling for Pac-12 championships here. And the funny thing is, Oregon wins the matchup last year. Oregon wins the conference. Oregon wins the Rose Bowl. Washington's coach quits. They now have a coordinator as a first-time head coach, which is what the Ducks are kind of doing, right? Because
new guy. Yeah.
FIU is not quite a Power 5 type team.
Yeah, he got railroaded there anyways.
And you guys got the better end of the coordinators out of the Penn State situation. So it's interesting to me from that sense. But I think of the available coaches out there to coach offense, you got probably the hottest commodity in college that you were looking for.
Yeah, because everybody was pretty surprised that he was fired in the first place at Mississippi State. Reading up on it last night when this news broke, I didn't realize some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that was going on. There was a fight that happened in between players. Some guy actually got seriously hurt, you know, and a bone in his face got seriously hurt leading up to the Egg Bowl, and then it kind of carried over after the bowl game. So there was a lot of institutional control stuff kind of going on behind the scenes that they weren't confident in, and then they didn't live up to the expectations, I guess, that they have at Mississippi State, and they felt like they didn't improve from year one to year two with what they thought they had talent-wise. You know, people are texting in, you know, part of being a good offensive coordinator is finding your best player and using them. There's no doubt about that. He did that with Saquon Barkley, and he was a monster. Somebody also said at UConn when he was there, he took their offense to new heights. Like, this guy is well-respected around all of college football. And you hear all the comments from coaches and guys that are in the know in the sport. They say this is a home run hire for Oregon. And I also like the fact that it is a guy who has head coaching experience. I think that can help Mario Cristobal, because there's times when his main issue has been clock management, game management, kind of in-game decisions that have plagued him a little bit in the first 2 years. So having a guy with those experiences, just a lean on in the headset of saying, hey, what should we do here? Hey, don't forget about this. I think that's always a benefit instead of getting a young guy who doesn't have a lot of coaching experience at the highest of levels. I think that can help Mario Cristobal tremendously. But he's going to have a lot of pieces to work with at Oregon. But the main priority that his main task, I think, early on is going to be developing and establishing a quarterback, because that's the primary question for Oregon in 2020. They got a lot of talent on defense. You like their skill position guys. Ton of guys coming back from next year's team outside of the offensive line. But you got to find a way to develop and make Tyler Shuck the best quarterback that he possibly can be.
Well, I think the other part of that, too, is what did we just watch LSU do? We just watched them win the national championship with Ed Orgeron, a guy that I think he was 10 and 25 in his time at Ole Miss, mm-hmm. a coach that did not have that kind of respect. And he turned it around because he hired the right people.
Yeah.
And I thought when I was reading the Staples piece yesterday, just recapping LSU and how they got here, he had brought in a different offensive coordinator and their offense sucked. It was last year's team with Joe Burrow, where Joe Burrow had like 16 touchdowns or something. And he recognized that offense is not winning them anything. So he got rid of him. He brought back Emsinger, and then Joe Brady came and worked for him, and it changed everything.
Yeah.
But I think a big part of that, too, is Edo's a great recruiter. Edo's a great motivator. Edo loves to play the CEO type, where he's going around encouraging everybody, still diving into his coaching on the defensive line, but still mainly letting everybody do their job. And PJ Fleck said that, and I thought it was a great statement. You hire people that you don't have to worry about.
You handle your thing.
I don't want my hand in all the pots here. So he hired Joe Moorhead, potentially, if he signs the contract in Eugene, where Mario's still going to have interest on the offensive line and seeing the game plan, but for the most part probably knows he can trust him and doesn't have to worry quite the same way that he was working with Arroyo. Yeah. Because Arroyo, that was really his... He had coached before, but that was him getting going in the Power 5 and the Pac-12.
Well, and it's one of those things, too, that I give them the benefit of the doubt until they screw something up. And you look at the hires that Cristobal has made, not the hires that Taggart made of holdovers like Marcus Arroyo. That wasn't Cristobal's hire. You look at the hires he's made. Wilson, the linebacker coach they got from Washington State, just nabbed in recruiting the two best linebackers in the country in Flo. Penei Sewell's younger brother, so he clearly has had an impact in that regard. Avalos and what he did to the defense last year, moving on from Jim Leavitt. And so I trust him. I think he has done a great job of finding talent at the coaching staff, and I think he did it again on offense.
All right, well, we have two stops to make on the Daily Ticker. One of those will be with Tyson Alger, who covers the Oregon Ducks, to ask him what he thinks about Joe Moorhead potentially being the OC in Oregon. And the other is this Penn State story. James Franklin and Penn State are included in a lawsuit by a former player for some hazing and some very sketchy things. So we'll make two stops on the Daily Ticker next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in Daily Ticker time here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Our first guest is this Penn State story, Mike Persak of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Wrote a really good piece on it. James Franklin and Penn State named in a lawsuit by a former player, and he joins us now. Mike, thanks so much for hopping on with us here in Portland, Oregon, man. We appreciate it. First of all, just your thoughts on how bad of a look this is for the program, given what they went through about 6 years ago.
First of all, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. It's obviously a terrible look, and the details in the lawsuit are extremely graphic. Current prominent players are named in it. Obviously, James Franklin is named in it. It's obviously a bad look, and I think a lot of times it's probably people remember the what happened a few years ago with Jerry Sandusky and Joe Paterno and all that. And while I think it's unfair to, bring that up, obviously Jerry Sandusky's name was evoked in this lawsuit too. So you have to imagine that the administration and all that is very, conscious of, public perception of the program and the school too. So it's obviously not a good look, individually as a case itself, but on a grander scheme too.
Well, and two, you'll have to refresh my memory on this because I don't follow it as closely as you do. But this is kind of the second controversy, if I remember correctly, that's been around James Franklin. There was something with the team doctor. So if you could refresh our memory what that was. And then I know it's just speculation at this point, but now kind of the second thing going on around him. How do we feel like this plays out for James Franklin?
The original, what you're referring to is team doctor, basically came out saying that the football staff was trying to keep him from like pulling players out of games and from giving them proper treatment, that sort of thing. That's sort of quieted down. I'm not exactly sure how it all played out, but nothing really ended up coming from it. In terms of what happens with James Franklin, obviously, it's important to remember that this is just a lawsuit right now. Nothing has been proven. And the other thing about this is that it was investigated, and that's that was pretty much Penn State's statement on it yesterday, was that nobody really knew the details. Everyone knew that there's an internal investigation surrounding this sort of thing, surrounding complaints around hazing. And it was investigated internally. It was investigated by the police, and it was eventually brought to the district attorney, who opted not to pursue any criminal charges. So that's pretty much what Penn State is, their statement on is that, listen, it's been looked into. We didn't find any fault. That's their statement. But yeah, in terms of what could happen, it's hard to say. It's hard to, I don't really want to speculate on it too much because I don't necessarily feel qualified to say exactly like how bad it could get. But certainly not a good thing.
Yeah, I think you look at the school and you instantly have to take it seriously. But when I read your piece, I couldn't help because the player that's in this lawsuit is Isaiah Humphreys, and he's alleging that James Franklin ignored violent sexual hazing on the Nittany Lions football team. That had some players, as you put it in your story on the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette website, saying, "I'm going to Sandusky you," which is just a horrific look. And look, you do want to take it seriously, but running through the story and how you kind of outlined what's been going on, it seems like they've had a couple investigations and they've come away with no witnesses, nobody to really corroborate what this kid is saying. There was one player, I think, that it was in the story that you put that he was suspended for a game and they said it was conduct detrimental to the team, but it was for one game. Do you think Penn State's looking at this and this is potentially something where they end up having to pay a kid to settle a lawsuit? Do you think this gets thrown out? Where do you think the confidence is for Penn State right now and backing James Franklin in something like this?
Obviously, you know, I guess to start with, Penn State is currently saying, like, you know, like I said, we looked into it and didn't find anything. What the lawsuit alleges, because it does mention that there was an investigation, the lawsuit alleges that Penn State actively tried to hide the evidence and kind of get everybody on the same page to throw off the lawsuit or throw off the investigation, I should say. So that's, you know, that's brought into it. And the troubling part, because it isn't just necessarily that Franklin is alleged to have known about it. The lawsuit is pretty much claiming that coaches and specifically Franklin knew about it. And then there were active measures to punish Isaiah Humphreys for complaining about it and to essentially like ostracize him and force him to transfer and kind of get him out of the program. So that's kind of the part of it that that brings Franklin into it. It isn't necessarily that he was endorsing the hazing or things like that. As far as I can tell, it's more that he knew about it after the fact and didn't do anything and specifically took actions, or the football program took actions to punish Isaiah Humphreys for coming out about it. Obviously, all allegedly, but that's what the lawsuit said.
Well, and being an idiot when it comes to legal matters, I have no clue how this plays out. Just what are, like, for us that want to follow the story, what's the next thing we should look for in this?
So the lawsuit demands at the end, the last like point on the the case file is it demands a jury trial. So obviously you would look for the court itself to accept the case and set up a jury trial and all that. And obviously there's a chance that it doesn't get that far, that Isaiah Humphreys settles with the school and it goes away too. That's always a possibility. But that's kind of the next step, is to see exactly what does happen. And I'm not, I'm not necessarily an expert on it either, but legal proceedings, but that's at least what I'm looking for.
None of us are lawyers, Mike. It's okay. Mike Persak, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, covering this Penn State situation, the lawsuit alleging Penn State players took part in graphic hazing and Franklin ignored comments. Really good write-up, really good reporting, and we'll keep following this story, Mike, and maybe have you on if something comes out more about this. Thank you so much for joining us, man.
Sounds good, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. There we go. Great stuff from Mike Persak in Pittsburgh on the Penn State lawsuit and everything going on there. Let's shift gears. We talked about the Oregon potentially hiring Joe Moorhead, is what everybody is reporting. And Tyson Alger, our good friend, longtime beat writer covering the Oregon Ducks for The Athletic. He's on Twitter, @TysonAlger, joins us now. Tyson, if this ends up being true and Oregon does finally send out the press release because he signs the deal, what do you make of nabbing Joe Moorhead as the new OC?
I think it's a really good hire. Especially if you look back to, if you just go back to Monday when Cristobal was talking about, what they were looking for in this position. And he said, no offense to Marcus Arroyo, but they were looking for an upgrade. And there was no reason to think Oregon couldn't. I mean, this is a much better job than it was 2-3 years ago when Arroyo came on board. They're coming off a Rose Bowl. Cristobal has established himself as a bona fide head coach, Power Five head coach, one of the major up and comers in the sport. And so Oregon had a lot of kind of leverage and time to make this decision. And if you look at Moorhead's resume outside of the last 2 years as a head coach at Mississippi State, he's been outstanding. I mean, he did the Penn State's offense in 1 year, essentially what Jim Leavitt did that 1 year from when they went from Brady Hoke to Leavitt. He was able to usher in substantial performance increases in just one season. And if you look back, he did that at Fordham before that. He's a really well-respected mind in college football. He likes running a lot of those RPOs, and it was one kind of the first offenses to really fundamentalize that. And I think overall this is kind of a home run hire for the Ducks, especially when you look at Washington just hired the guy that was fired before Moorhead replaced him at Penn State. If you're talking about trying to win the press conference or the press release, I think Oregon's got it here.
Well, we saw last year, too, when you upgrade a coordinator, what it can mean for one side of the ball, and going from Leavitt to Avalos, the numbers speak for themselves, and Oregon's defense is one of the best we've seen in a long time. I feel like you've upgraded there as well now, an offensive coordinator from Arroyo to Moorhead. My only fear is just the crystal ball factor. Like, he has a style that he wants to play. He wants to be physical. He wants to run the football. And he has a pretty big hand on what they do just on offense. Do you think that he's learned maybe, and now that Moorhead's coming in with all this experience, that he'll back off a little bit on that side of the ball?
You know, that's going to be the really interesting going forward, because I was reading this story about Moorhead's time at Fordham, and he was really talking about how things were able to really take off when he was given complete reign to do what he wanted on offense. Mm-hmm. And as you brought up, there was definitely some kind of clashing opinions on how much of Oregon's kind of conservativeness on offense this year was from Arroyo, or it was kind of Cristobal kind of stirring the drink a little bit himself too. But I feel like this is a situation where either Moorhead is going to be able to come in and do exactly what he wants, or he's completely on the same page with Cristobal in terms of what they want to do. Because I mean, if this is an issue for Moorhead in terms of him not wanting to have too many people have input on his offense, I mean, I doubt he would get into something where he thinks he's going to be kind of cut off at the shins. But then again, he is coming off of being fired. But I mean, he is still an attractive offensive coordinator candidate. And I mean, this is a big job he landed. So yeah. I would imagine with a coach with this sort of resume, he'll be able to have more leeway in being able to kind of institute what he wants with his offense.
Tyson Alger's our guest here, Duck beat writer. Find him on Twitter at Tyson Alger. How would De'Ara King look in a Duck uniform running a Joe Moorhead offense, in your opinion?
Hey, sorry, what was that? I lost you there.
How would De'Ara King look in a Duck uniform running a Joe Moorhead offense in Eugene?
Pretty good.
Are they sniffing? Do you think they're sniffing around there? Because right now I think all we have is a couple freshmen and Tyler Shuck, right?
Right. And I mean, I'm so excited for this spring. Like, this is the first spring that I've been excited to cover in quite some time, just because you're going to have, like, you basically have like three or four unknown guys at quarterback. And I mean, Tyler Shuck, I'm not saying he's unknown, but like, we haven't really been able to see what he's been able to do with kind of without Herbert kind of hanging over him as a shadow. So between Butterfield, Shuck and some of the other guys that they could potentially be bringing in, I think this is going to be just a fantastic spring to watch, especially if they do bring in an offensive coordinator who lets them open it up a little bit. But I mean, spending the last 6 months or so talking to guys about Tyler Shuck, I mean, the players seem to think that he's the real deal, and I get that in more in a real sense than we ever did with kind of like a little bit of the hype train that we had with like Jeff Lockie 5 years ago, or Taylor Alley. I feel like that was a little bit more in-house produced, but like when you talk to some of the players, I think they legitimately think that Shuck, like I don't think Shuck will be bad by any means. I think he has a very high floor. I'm just not quite sure where his ceiling is quite yet.
Yeah, he seems like he'll be a fun guy to cover, too. He's got a good personality, a little swagger to him. It was fun to listen to him out for the spring game. I do got to ask, though, how long did it take to get over the Rose Bowl hangover?
I mean, we've seen how quickly these Oregon guys move on, whether it be on recruiting, and I mean,
Stop. We're not talking about the football team here. I was told very good information that the guy that partied the hardest at the media party was one beat writer in particular, and I think he's asking the recovery went.
I mean, the thing is that my sources aren't all that great in this field, and it would it would be a stretch for me to speak out of turn on events that may or may not have happened. But the thing is I promise you, I will get you that information when we get it.
Oh, okay.
I'm not able to deliver it at said time.
You gotta cross check your references. I get it. You gotta do your due diligence. Well, I understand.
Until we hear otherwise, I'm gonna run with that guy got hammered on Cosmos. That's what we're going with.
We did have a couple of glasses of red wine on the last night. Got a little bougie down there. I will ask though, and I know Cristobal mentioned it, but I'm just curious, what's the latest we're hearing on Jalen Redd? Because he not playing the Rose Bowl, that was a big head-scratcher for everybody wondering what happened. Have we found out what happened? What's his status?
Yeah, we don't know exactly what happened yet, but what we do know is, you know, it was asked at his Monday press conference whether or not he's with the team, and Cristobal confirmed that he's back with the team and taking place in activities, and that's really about all he expanded on that. He said it was still personal reasons. It seemed like he didn't want to talk much about the matter. So it's a confusing thing because he took part in every single Rose Bowl activity, he was at media day and all that stuff, and then, you know, he just kind of disappeared. So I mean, that's not generally how it works, but you know, that's the information that they've provided at this time.
Yeah. All right, great stuff. Tyson Alger, The Athletic, covering the Oregon Ducks, our good friend of the show. His Twitter handle is @TysonAlger. Enjoy this time, because I'm sure in about 2 hours you'll have to report some more stuff, and maybe check in on that story from Southern California about a guy who got hammered at the Rose Bowl. We'd like to hear the details on that someday.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to track that one down, but I'll do my best, guys.
All right, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from Tyson Alger, covering the Oregon Ducks on the situation going on with Joe Moorhead potentially there, maybe Derek King transferring, and then we talk with Mike Persak of the Penn State story and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We'll have more on this. Let's continue this. I am curious where Duck Fan is on a Derek King, and so maybe we'll jump into that next on The Fan. I just saw a thing on the interweb. You ever heard of it?
I think I've been there before.
The internet, it's kind of a dangerous place.
Online? What does that mean? They go online? I don't understand.
Did you watch the debates yesterday?
I did watch a chunk of the debate yesterday.
I, by the way, I hope everybody on both sides watches debates.
I like watching debates.
I'm always curious who's, you know, where people leaning. But I thought it was really awkward when Warren... They called out Sanders and saying, I guess Bernie said that women couldn't be presidents. He totally reportedly said that to her in 2018. And he was like, I did not say that.
It is a whole thing right now.
I guess they had a super awkward encounter at the end of the debate trying to shake hands.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I saw it later, but I missed it live.
Yeah, I missed it live, too. I can only handle so much of debates. I usually give them a little bit of time. And then you're like, all right, I've heard all of this and I'm ready to move on and watch something else.
Yeah.
But he reached in for the old handshake afterwards and she... pulled it back, no handshake.
They need to get rid of the other people on the stage. I mean, I think we know who the three or four are. We don't need Tom Steyer up there buying his way to the debate.
Yeah, it happens eventually.
But I just saw something on the internet during the commercial break, and it's funny because I thought it was the greatest thing that happened over the weekend. Despite my team winning, despite a couple good games, a crazy comeback, I thought the best moment of the weekend... And I know it's already Wednesday and we're getting ready for this coming weekend. Yeah. But the best moment was watching Jimmy Johnson and Bill Cowher get inducted.
That was pretty damn cool.
That was really special. And somebody made a great point and said, I would watch a TV show where if all the TV show was every year during Hall of Fame induction time, they film and they follow this big ass guy. What is it, Bill?
Dude, that guy, where did he come from? He's like 6'11".
He's with the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, I'd never seen him before.
He's a failed politician, first of all.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah,
he
but actually, he's been there for a while.
He had to quit because he forged checks.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So he's a failed politician. He then went into the AFL, the Arena Football League.
That business is going well, I've heard.
That business is done.
Oh,
and
I'm sorry.
He's been at the Pro Football Hall of Fame now, but I looked him up because I was like, who is this big guy? I've seen him before.
He's massive. He towered over everybody.
He makes like Tony Gonzalez look small. And
he
you're
does.
Like, what?
Somebody had a funny thing on Twitter. I can't remember who it was, but they had the picture of him announcing it to either Cowher or Jimmy Johnson and said, when he shows up, you're either getting whacked or you're getting into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's one of the two.
Like, this
That's
guy's
a
strong man for the mafia, or you're getting an invitation to Canton.
But somebody said, if you followed him around and he just got to go knock on all the doors or make the phone calls, or you made it so it could be done in person, so he's having to go to everybody's houses.
Sure.
I would absolutely watch that. And I thought it was awesome to watch Bill Cowher get in. Everybody's debating whether Bill Cowher should be in the Hall of Fame or not. I'm not going to do that. But Bill Cowher's was really special. I didn't know they were going to do it for Jimmy.
I didn't either.
And so then I watched the halftime of the next day, and that was such a shock. And honest to God, Dirt, I thought Jimmy Johnson was going to die on live television. I thought he was having a heart attack because they're, are you okay, Jimmy? And he's like, I can't breathe.
Yeah,
and
I was like,
oh my God, he's going to die on live TV getting into the Hall of Fame.
Then they had the live shot on Troy Aikman too in the booth. He took his glasses off and he was tearing up.
That was really cool. And I don't like the Cowboys, but that was a badass moment.
That was really
cool.
It was long overdue for Jimmy Johnson too. And Cowher, look, I the only people I saw were upset were Seahawks fans because Mike Holmgren isn't in the Hall of Fame. I saw a lot of Seahawks fans get all butthurt over the weekend. It's like, just because you're upset that Holmgren isn't in doesn't mean that you need to say Bill Cowher isn't a Hall of Famer.
Holmgren's going to get in the Hall of Fame. We know Holmgren's a Hall of Fame guy.
Right. You imagine he'll get there eventually.
Who walked away from the game who's been away longer? It's been Cowher. Because Holmgren went to Cleveland, remember?
He did, right.
And
he
that was a roles. Failed experiment.
He had some other roles, too. But the counterpoint to this, though, is that you can also get the other side of it. Now, I'm blanking on the name. Who's the Cowboy player that didn't get in today? Just found
Drew
out.
Pearson.
Drew Pearson. So they had the reverse action of it because they had cameras on him thinking he was going to get into the Hall of Fame, and he found out he didn't. And that was super emotional the other way.
Yeah, I don't know. Some people, Drew Pearson's an interesting one on Twitter, too, because some people will argue, yeah, he was first team all decade in the 70s, but that's mainly because the Cowboys played in all those Super Bowls.
They were the Cowboys.
Because I think I saw a thread where people were arguing back and forth, and I'm like, I always dive into those. And one guy was like, look up the stats. The guy who was number two of the 70s decade wide receiver had better stats than Drew Pearson.
Now is that guy Hall of Famer?
I didn't look that up.
Okay, not sure on that.
And look, I didn't watch Drew Pearson play. Listeners out there that did, you have to tell me if you thought that you were watching a Hall of Famer, but I did feel bad watching him.
Dude, that was super sad.
Realize he's not getting in yet again. Like, he kind of slammed the table a little bit, and he got up. You could just tell he just looked like a pissed off guy. Like, I worked my butt off and I'm not a Hall of Famer?
You're thinking it's going to happen eventually. He's the only member from that 70s all-decade team to not be in the Hall of
Fame.
Only
one.
So that would stick in your jaw a little bit.
Yeah, so I don't know. I saw that people arguing about it and Bill Cowher, and I thought, we didn't bring that up on Monday or Tuesday. That was probably the coolest thing over the weekend to me, was watching those two guys get in.
It was a really cool way to do it. I'm with you. I don't know if you can handle it that way for everybody, but especially for the guys that are on TV and you can do it like that. That was fun just to see the raw emotion of it, because you know how much it means to them. And then some of the guys, like the Jimmy Johnson one, getting to see Troy Aikman be emotional too. He coached him, and the great relationship that they've had over the years. That was a really cool thing this weekend.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got a lot to get to in the second hour of the show. I didn't get to it there. I teased it. I'm sorry. We'll do it next. Coming up to start the second hour, De'Arik King, the Houston quarterback, ended up transferring from the program. He's in the portal. Should the Ducks be looking his way? Should any other Pac-12 teams be making an offer here? Could De'Arik King swing college football a little bit? Let's talk about that. Kickoff hour number two next on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.